This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Week 6 in the NFL kicks off tonight from Arrowhead. Chiefs taking on the Denver Broncos, and we're kicking things off right here on the Lombardi Line. Thanks for joining us this morning on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, alongside former NFL General Manager Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, and of course, Michael, this is an NFL football show. We throw in some college football every now and then, but I'm excited today with MLB postseason being absolute chaos. We're going to have a very special baseball guest on today. You pumped?
I am pumped. I mean, Big Poppy, yeah, you got to be pumped for him. You know, I used to go to, when I worked up in New England, I used to go see him play up there at the great stadium in Fenway. So, yeah, I am excited. I thought you were going to say we were excited for Mike Somich, which I'm excited for Mike Somich, too, and Troy Rednick. I'm excited for both those guys. But you got to get, you know, the showstopper right there is Big Papa.
Yeah, I was going to say,
Poppy.
Regardless, it's an all-star lineup. One of them was just a 10-time all-star Hall of Famer and three-time World Series champion, but all-stars all around. So in about 30 minutes, we'll have our guy, Mike Somich, professional handicapper, VSiN host, get some of his best plays for the weekend. And Troy Rank will get the Denver Broncos insider perspective. He does a great job over at Denver 7, kind of figure out what's going on there in the Sean Payton era and maybe some of those next steps looking ahead already next year and what might unfold from that standpoint. But excited to have David Ortiz, Big Poppy, in hour two and talk a little bit about the chaos, Michael, that's been the MLB postseason, because we have two 100 win teams that end up getting swept, another 100 win team on the brink tonight. And I gotta tell you, as a woman who is married to a man who is both an Atlanta Braves and Carolina Panthers fan, the household needs a win. We need something positive this week.
Yeah, it you know, that's not a good thing, right?
No.
I mean, look, you got, you know, you quote the wins, but how about the money these teams spent? The Dodgers, I mean, they've spent a lot of money, right? And they're out.
Yeah.
They're out. And to me, it's just sometimes it just doesn't always mean, you know, it's the situations matter, right? It's who we playing matters more than as much as how good are we. And if you don't play to your best level at the end of the year, you know, I wrote about five teams are going to have a Super Bowl makeup. I didn't say they were going. I said they have the elements of a Super Bowl team, because if they don't stay healthy and if they don't play well in January, they're not going there. I think that's got to be the key here. It's what we learn in baseball, too. You can't get in a slump at the wrong time.
You can't. And I know a lot of Braves fans are really upset about the seeding. They wish that there was a reseeding situation, wish they weren't playing the Phillies right now. But you got to win the games that are in front of you. And a big one tonight, Atlanta -155 favorite, taking on the Phillies, total 8.5. If the Phillies get it done today, they cement their spot in the NLCS. But for now, let's get it going with Thursday night football, Michael. And I know you're far more interested in Al Michaels' tie tonight than you are on the matchup. But we got to talk about it.
It's the only thing on my mind. I mean,
I know.
About worlds colliding, Stormy. Just think about the worlds that are colliding. We got Al's tie and we got Taylor Swift in the house.
Yep.
You don't think he's going to put together the most brilliant knot of all time tonight? I mean, you know, he's got royalty entering. I mean, who's happier than Jeff Bezos right now? Who is?
Oh, no, you're absolutely correct from that standpoint. But I feel kind of bad. For as much as I enjoy the Taylor Swift content, and I think it's great that we're introducing a bunch of people that might not otherwise watch football, getting them pulled in. However we get fans, we will take fans, right? Continue to grow the sport. It's a great thing. But I feel bad for the broadcasters in this spot. All the cutaways to the booth, all the things that are going to happen throughout the course of the game. How many broadcasters have tried to weave in song lyrics? Like, we can be done with that. It's okay. She's just a person. They're in a relationship. Move on.
It's funny because we got bad weather. We got 17-mile-an-hour winds, maybe gust up to 20 miles. I don't think there is rain, but there obviously could be rain. We have a team that's on a 15-game heater against the other team. We know that Mahomes isn't a great cover guy as the favorite. I think he's 500 as a favorite cover. And so there's so much to talk about that if you really enjoy talking about football, you would be able to cover it. But we understand most of these games aren't. I mean, we're going to watch a game tonight where the Denver Broncos have allowed a passer rating of 124.6, which through five games is the fifth highest in the Super Bowl era. Their 77% completion percentage is the highest through five games since we started the Super Bowl. I mean, this we're talking about historically bad. Mm-hmm. That's not good to put those two words together, history and bad. Historically bad. And that's, you know, which lends you to think, okay, we got a chance here with the, you know, but a lot of money's been coming in on Denver. Denver's the contrarian play because even though Mahomes is 22-2 straight up as a double-digit favorite, he's 10-13 and one against against the spread.
Michael, I have even more numbers for you from that standpoint.
Go ahead. Fire away. I
know you love these. I know you love these because while yes, the Broncos have yet to cover this season, they have covered three straight in four of the last five meetings against Kansas City. Historically, and I know this dates back, but 20-6 ATS as a double-digit underdog. And KC, going back to last season, well, they're 6-0 straight up against the division, just 1-5 against the spread. And then you throw in those Patrick Mahomes numbers that you just mentioned against the spread. So a lot of things are actually showing up. Hey, maybe take the double-digit dog in this spot. Yet we're still seeing the line move to Kansas City. I just saw DraftKings before we came on the air move all the way up to 11. So it's a really interesting perspective. Where do you stand on this? Would you be more intrigued by taking the points with Denver? The last couple meetings, for example, KC has the big lead, but the defense lets their foot off the gas a little bit. Denver works their way in, but Russell Wilson and the second half offense hasn't really been particularly productive for Denver. So how are you looking at this?
Well, I mean, I'm looking at it as I don't know if I could trust Denver. I mean, I could trust KC because their offense has not been as explosive as we think. What I do trust is their defense. And I think it'll be hard for Wilson. I think it'll be hard for the Broncos to score points. So if you put me under a gun, especially with the bad weather indicates defense. The problem is if you don't think they're going to score a lot of points, that 10.5 is a high total, high point differential on a low scoring game. So I think Kansas City can move the football. I don't think Mahomes has any trouble throwing a wind. When you play at Texas Tech, that's all you get is wind out there. So I'm sure he can. And I would lean towards Denver. I would lean towards the team with no defense, which is I would lean against the team with no defense, which are the Denver Broncos. I would take the Chiefs and lay the points, but I'm not going to deny you that when I see 10-13-1 as Mahomes is against double digits, it does impact me.
Speaking of Texas Tech, the last time that the Denver Broncos beat Kansas City, Mahomes was at Texas Tech. He was 20 years old, and Peyton Manning and Alex Smith were the quarterbacks in the game. So it has been a hot minute, Michael. But let's go back to the weather implications of this in the total. People that were paying attention to the weather radar early in the week, and we even brought this up as a big conversation topic, not just for this game, but for a lot of the games that are going to be on the East Coast this weekend, weather's going to be an impact. They got ahead of it on this total, which has been bet down from 52 now to 47. From a points perspective, do you think that this number could continue to go down? Is that the way that you would lean as well, given the implications, or not so much because you said you didn't have a fear with Patrick Mahomes still being able to move the football in the wind?
Well, you know, when you watch, you know, look, they scored 21 points against the Jets, and the Jets were very giving, right? The Jets were very, so were the Broncos. They were giving things away. The Jets defense isn't anywhere near as good as this Chiefs defense is. And so let's just say they score 21 again, but with the win, let's cut that down to 13 because I think it's going to be hard for Russell to throw it. Now, Russell can, you know, he throws the football well. I think he'll adjust to the win. I think if you got to believe that as bad as the Chiefs are, they've had too many drops on offense in terms of being explosive. They're not a bad offense. They're just not an explosive offense. The longest play was 33 yards last week, kind of in a throw up. And they've turned the ball over. I mean, look, Mahomes has turned the ball over more this year than in the past five games that he's ever done. So at home, so you got to believe that Denver could get good field position. I see this as a 24-10 game type game. That's kind of where I see it.
Okay, so do trend toward the under there. And speaking of just like the way that offense has gone from a wide receiver perspective, the top guy in that wide receiver room in terms of yards is Justin Watson with 219 yards. He's had four games now where 10 different players have had a reception. So they're still trying to figure out who's going to be the guy to kind of take over in that group. For context, former Chief Tyreek Hill has 651 total receiving yards this year. So nearly triple the output of the top guy right now for Kansas City from that standpoint. In terms of injuries, while Travis Kelce, we know, is technically listed as questionable, that Taylor Swift news should let you know that he's probably going to be in there. His anytime touchdown is a minus 170 price. First touchdown plus 420. He, of course, working his way back from the ankle injury he sustained last week, but still came back in the game, ended up scoring a touchdown anyways. The big one on the Broncos side, they will get Javonte Williams off the injury report. He's good to go coming off the quad. No Frank Clark dealing with an illness after making his debut last week in relatively limited fashion, so he won't get to play his former team. No DJ Jones or Baron Browning either. Greg Dulcich is questionable, but I believe expected to play. So those are the big notables that folks should be aware of here.
And I think Frank Clark's headed elsewhere. It's been reported today that the Broncos have talked about either releasing him outright or letting him go somewhere else. I mean, look, the end of his year in Kansas City wasn't the same player. So when they signed him, they were signing that he could kind of get his game back again, and that hasn't happened. So, you know, but I think tonight's an important night for Kansas City to kind of get some continuity going back, some confidence. What scares me about not taking the points, when not laying the points, is that. But when they played the Bears, which is kind of a bad defense too, that was a rout. They blew that game away. But the weather could impact that. And that's the only hesitation I think I have, is the weather preventing them from making it a blowout.
A lot of good conversation topics for when we do have Broncos insider Troy Rank join us later on in the hour. We'll dissect this game in various ways throughout the course of the next 2 hours, including from a proc perspective at the end of the show. We're going to take our first time out, but when we come back, these players, is it right to have panic or patience based on their early performances? We'll find out.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all of the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can also check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You can sign up for just $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. Time for panic or patience here on the Lombardi Line, because there are a number of players, units, and situations that raise the question of whether or not we should be exercising patience or be legitimately concerned, Michael. So let's jump into a couple of these topics, starting with Carolina Panthers quarterback Bryce Young, who has started off his rookie season with an 0-5 start. The former number one overall pick is 32nd in the NFL in QBR. He's averaging only 187.5 passing yards per game, 5 touchdowns, 4 picks. And it just hasn't been a good start overall. Granted, he hasn't had a whole lot of support either. The offensive line has been rough. But if you're a Carolina Panthers fan or backer, or just somebody that is interested in watching this team have good football and have a good product on the field, are you panicking that Carolina's made the wrong choice at quarterback and it's only downhill from here? Or should we be exercising patience for their situation?
Oh, I think this is all about patience. I mean, look, Troy Aikman was 1-15 as a starter. I mean, Peyton Manning even admitted that if he played for Bill Parcells in his rookie year, he would have been benched. He threw so many interceptions. So, yeah, I think it's a lot about patience. I think, you know, it's going to be interesting moving forward as Bryce Young listened to Frank Wright talk about the quarterback and who selected who and who didn't, is how he reacts to it. Because I got, and we talked about this quite extensively on the GM shuffle, I got the sense that, you know, he didn't want him. That Reich would have preferred C.J. Stroud. And if I got that sense, I wonder what the sense was that Young got. So it'll be interesting moving forward this week.
Yeah, and that's a good reminder. New episode of the GM Shuffle with you and Femi dropping today. Episodes out every Monday and Thursday throughout this NFL season. But in that same thought process, Michael, you have an owner in David Tepper who wants to win now, and obviously that's not the case. So wonder what that means for the coaching staff that hasn't had success here early. Things haven't panned out how they wanted to. You have a quarterback now who's probably lacking some confidence based on his head coach's comments. And then you have the Bears, who have your first round pick next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting how this happens, because every time I've seen an owner point a head coach kind of blame the owner or let people inside the building, it hasn't been good for the coach. So, look, and how about this, Stormy? They go on a bye next week, well-deserved. And then when they come back from the bye, they got the Houston Texans, and C.J. Stroud conversations will be happening all over the place.
Yeah, you have to go head-to-head with the guy everybody's talking about, your head coach and quarterback coach wanting. Let's stick with the theme of rookie quarterbacks, but go to Anthony Richardson, who already in just four NFL starts has had to leave games in three of them with injuries, missed a game with a concussion. Now he's being placed on injured reserve with that shoulder injury where he'll miss at least 4 weeks, but the expectation between 4 and 8. Is this a situation where we should have patience or panic given the injury situation? Is it like a dumb luck situation? Is this something that's going to hinder his development moving forward?
Well, I think there's a little bit of both here. I think you need to have patience, but you should be panicking. And I think you can tell a story to the young man that, you know, A, you're going to have to take care of yourself. We're going to have to get you bigger. You're still a young player. I think that's what we miss. You know, one of the reasons they have age limits on little kids is because their bodies aren't ready for the pounding. That's why you play freshman football. That's why you have a JV team. And then you have a varsity team, because as you grow, you're playing in this college. When a young player comes right from college, as young as he is, even though he looks like Tarzan, he may not have the physicality needed or his body's developed. So I think there's patience here for sure. But the panic is, we got to make sure we get you right.
Yeah. And again, you referenced the college days, only 13 starts in college. You're really trying to develop him at this NFL level, and dealing with injuries is going to slow that process down. Shane Steichen, by the way, updating Richardson's health yesterday, told reporters they're still looking at everything as it pertains to treatment options. So surgery is still on the table, but no actual confirmation on that one way or the other yet. How about the Pittsburgh Steelers and this offense, Michael? Despite leading the AFC North right now, shout out that 3-2 record. They are sitting atop the division. Offensively, things have not been going well. 30th in yards per game, 268.2, and points per game, just 15.8 points per game. Panic or patience with the Steelers?
I think I would be panicking, because not only are they not talented in the quarterback position, their scheme is very basic and generic. It's like they just don't have any rhythm to it. And they do have some good players. I mean, like a lot of teams we talk about, most of the problems start and end with their offensive line. Are they good enough at quarterback? You know, I never thought Pickett was going to be labeled to lead the team, that everything had to be good around him. I'm not sure everything's good around him. So it's a hard guy to evaluate. It really is. So I think for me, I think it's time to panic. I think they need to do something to change, because even though they've won three games, do they have enough confidence that they can continue to win?
Well, and that's the question, confidence, and can they win with coaching and defense? Like, how much will it take to get that offense on track?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's going to take, I mean, they have great skill. They get Johnson back off of IR. I mean, their running back situation is good. You know, their offensive line has not played anywhere near the level they need them to play. And that's everybody in that line. So, you know, that they missed Freiermuth last week, but still won. You know, they drafted the kid from Washington, from Georgia. He's got one catch. I mean, they've got to find a way to get some of the skill going. I mean, Pickens, we talk about how good he is all the time, but, you know, does he make enough plays? I think that's going to be the key. He's got to get the ball, right? You got to find a way to get him the football.
For the Washington Commanders, that 2-0 start feels like forever ago based on what we have seen recently. The Commanders have lost three straight games. Washington's defense has allowed over 30 points for four straight weeks. If you're Ron Rivera, is this a panic moment for you? I know you say he's not panicking, at least outwardly, yeah, based on some of his comments. But should he be panicking? Like, how much longer of a leash should Ron Rivera have, especially with the new ownership coming to town?
Well, I think he should panic, and I think he should roll up his sleeves, and I think he should get in the defensive meeting. I mean, he was a defensive coordinator in the league before he became a head coach. And, you know, the quarterbacks, they've got to do a better job protecting the quarterback. The quarterback's on pace to get sacked 99 times. So when Ron goes to the offensive meeting room, the defensive meeting room, to help the defense, he needs to shoot over to the offensive room and help them protect the quarterback. But, yeah, I would panic here if I were him, because I think he believes he's not going to get fired. But to me, the product on the field is always challenging. And if you don't improve it, it's going to be really difficult for him. So I think it's time to panic there for sure.
Sam Howell sacked 29 times this season, the most by far of any quarterback in the NFL right now. What have you seen from the young quarterback to this point?
I like him a lot. I think he's got good arm. I think he's got great instincts. I think he's got a good feel. He can make plays with his feet. The second play, when the play breaks down, he's got a chance to make a second play. I think he's for real. I really do. And I think they might have hit the lottery with them. But unfortunately, they don't protect them. They constantly try to get five out in a route. They're not very good up front. And so a lot of things break down around them. But he's really good.
Yeah. The NFL record for sacks, Michael, in a single season is 76 from David Carr, back in 2002. Howell is on pace for 99. So hopefully things can just help the guy out a little bit. Okay, just come on. Keep the jersey clean for maybe one day. That would be positive. Let's go to the Minnesota Vikings, because we all knew that regression was coming, right? When you have 11 wins in a season in one score games, that's just not something that's sustainable in the long term. And we've seen that in the four losses this year being one score games, and they've ended up on the bad luck side of that spectrum. But if you're a Vikings fan, you see this record, you see Justin Jefferson going down on injured reserve, you see all the trade talks about your quarterback, panic or patience in Minnesota?
I think you have to be patient for one more week. I think if you go down and lose to the Bears, then I think you got to decide. Look, they have $42 million, Stormy, of debt in their cap this year. $42 million. It's a lot of players. But they got rid of them all. You know, they decided to take the losses this year. So if they go 1-5 and they know that, you know, everybody who's going to be 1-5 is going to say, well, we could be like the Lions and turn around like they did last year, or we could be like the Steelers and turn it around like they did last year. Okay, that might work. Yeah, that's good. But you're going to have Kirk Cousins, a free agent, and you're going to be so far in the draft, you're not going to be able to get a quarterback. Is that smart? How's that working out for you? Are you better off just getting rid of Kirk Cousins and his $10 million salary and taking more cap hits this year? I tend to go to the latter. I think the Vikings front office has already declared what they want to do. When you take $42 million in losses off of a playoff team, you're quietly behind closed doors trying to get your cap fixed. And if you go 1-5, the plan now is not only to get the cap fixed, is to get the team fixed in terms of draft picks and liquidating.
Yeah, start that rebuild. I don't think anybody, when they were looking at the schedule this year, circled Vikings Bears and said, wow, that's going to be a critical game. But that's what we have coming up this week. Vikings, a 2.5-point favorite on the road in Chicago, total 43.5. By the way, Kirk Cousins, when asked about the trade talk, said, quote, not worth my time and energy at this point. We're going to step aside. Mike Somich, professional handicapper, VSiN host, going to join us next. Get some of his best bets. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Basketball season is ready to tip off, and the VSiN experts have been hard at work tracking the latest player moves to help you bet smarter. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get our all-new NBA betting guide. It's got up-to-date previews on all 30 teams, futures and year-long player props, best bets on player awards, live betting strategies, plus advice on building your own NBA betting model. Compliments of senior NBA analyst Jonathan Von Tobel, the John Von model, if you will. Give yourself an edge this season and get the VSiN NBA betting guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber today. VSiN.com/subscribe is where you can do it. So we got the NBA coming up, the WNBA finals underway, the NHL, the October in full swing with Major League Baseball just keeps going on and on. All the while, we are rocking and rolling in college football in the National Football League. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bond, and Tony with you. Time to welcome a great friend of the show, Mike Somich, like we do every week around this time. VSiN, host of The Handle. Every weekend, 4 to 7 Pacific, 7 to 10 Eastern. Professional handicapper, does a great job on VSiN and DraftKings Network. What is going on, buddy? How we doing?
Oh, looking forward to a little Thursday night football here. Yeah. I mean, what more could you want than some Broncos Chiefs on a Thursday night?
Absolutely.
Taylor Swift. She wants Taylor Swift in the stands too. And Al Michaels tie. I mean, we just got the trifecta coming in. You appreciate that, being a horse racing guy. I mean, you got Al Michaels tie, you got Taylor Swift, and you got the game. I mean, who could wish for anything better?
I think we can assume Kelsey's going to be in now that Swift is in the house, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
pretty sure that's a safe bet.
And I would go with Kelsey first touchdown, too, since she's in the house. I think there's a correlation here. Let's correlate bet that.
Plus 475 first touchdown, minus 170 for an anytime. They know the books are at least like knowing that people are going to try to bet that because Kelsey's getting the rock with his girl in town. But let's get into some of the line moves for tonight, Mike. We've seen this tick up to 11 most spots with Kansas City laying the double digit number, and with weather impacting the game, most notably wind, that total has come down a big way from 52 now to 47. What do you make of the way that things have moved along here this week?
Pretty logical. I mean, the pro money on the under once this thing posted and we saw the weather for tonight was just it just came in an absolute Brinks trucks here, just backing it up, betting this one down to, like you said, 47. I think that's about the right number. I had this at 48.5 without factoring in weather. So I think 47 is right around correct. I do think it changes the style of offenses that we could likely see in the game. I think we're going to see a lot more running specifically from the Chiefs. I think they're going to want to ground and pound here against the worst run defense in the NFL. Denver giving up 187 yards per game. That's not just bad. That is just atrocious. You should not be giving up almost two bills per game on the ground in the NFL. And from a side perspective, I made this 10.2, so I'm right around where it needs to be. I have no appetite, though, to take the Broncos plus 11 here. They've lost 15 straight up. Mahomes 11-0 straight up against this Broncos team. And you just kind of have the feeling like if Kansas City does get up, I'm not really sure that Denver's one of those teams that you can expect to really bang through that back door for the backdoor cover. So I'm not touching the side or total here. I mentioned this run defense. I do like Isaiah Pacheco quite a bit tonight. Right now, his rushing total sitting at 74.5. I'll take the over on that. We just saw Breece Hall absolutely shred this defense for over 170 yards last weekend. I also like one of the props over at DraftKings.com. Only place I've seen this, they have a race to 20 and a race to 40 rushing yards. Right now, you can get Pacheco at plus 140 in the race to 20 rushing yards over at DraftKings.com. Love that bet as well. You're going to see split carries over on the defensive side with both Williams and McLaughlin. As long as they don't bust a big one, I think Pacheco able to get over that 20-yard mark first in the spot.
Yeah, I mean, Pacheco's sixth in the National Football League in yards after contact at 3.56. I mean, Achun is out of this world. He's 7.42. The next guy is Breece Hall, who you mentioned at 4.89. So, you know, even though he gets hit, he still can break yards. And you're right. I think this is a game where let's just get this thing over and score and get it done with, which, you know, it could also open it up for a backdoor cover. I think you're right to not play the number. I really do.
Yeah, if this was sitting somewhere in like the 9.5 range, I'd be interested in trying to tease Kansas City down. I'd be interested in KC at 9.5, but that number is never coming. I expect this to continue to get bet up. Wouldn't be shocked if we end up seeing somewhere around 12 at kickoff, because there's just not going to be a big appetite here from the recreational bettor to come in and take a Denver team that's looked absolutely atrocious. We're hearing there's some Jerry Jeudy locker room issues now. We saw the response we got from Sean Payton with Russell Wilson at the end of last week. It just doesn't feel like 4 days really enough to fix anything in Denver. But look, this Kansas City defense for the first time in a long time is the best unit on this Kansas City team. Now, love Mahomes, best player in football, but that defense is very, very good. They're the side of the ball that I think can dominate this game. And when you look at a Thursday night game, you already have a banged up Kelsey, you're in division. The last thing Kansas City wants to do is really extend this game out. So I think if they get a lead, they're just going to try and slow this down, grind it out, and just get off the field and get home with a W.
If anyone was going to score and potentially get into the end zone first, though, for this Broncos offense against the Chiefs, would it actually be Jaleel McLaughlin, though? We were talking in the commercial break about he's had three first touchdown scores yep. for Denver so far this year.
He has. I'm surprised the number is as high as it is. I believe his first touchdown score was a 40-1 hit. Then he was 20-1, or then he was 30-1. Then we saw him at 18-1. He's still sitting in double digits. So the price isn't too bad there. The big question, though, is what do we expect from this Denver offense? I would expect that you're going to see someone on the ground score for Denver, but with the total projected and the line, you're looking at Denver scoring somewhere in the low 20s. So you're talking about two possible touchdowns. I just don't see them scoring first in this game. I mentioned it earlier, Kansas City defense, in my mind, I'd rank them sixth right now in the NFL. I think they're going to be able to step it up and hold this Broncos team down. I think Kansas City gets on the board first. So it's tough for me to back someone, even at a pretty good price here from the Denver side. And you see that by just based on the prices you have on all of the KC players there for first touchdown score. If I was going to take a shot, give me Rashee Rice. He's been getting more and more target share with the Kelsey injury. Seems like Mahomes is starting to trust him as the number one wide receiver, getting 11-1 right now on him.
Yeah. Okay. So Baltimore went over to London on right after the Steeler heartbreaking loss that they had, where they did nothing in the second half except turn it over and get a punt blocked. And Tennessee's leaving today to go over there. Now, Tennessee doesn't have Tarrant. He's been already ruled out. And whether Justin Simmons plays or not, we don't know. He's questionable. They gave up more yards on the ground last week than they did the prior 2 weeks combined. You like Baltimore. A lot of people seem to like Tennessee because of the Vrabel being the dog and he's so good as a dog and all that stuff. But I'm kind of with you on this one. I think the line shift, you got to go to Baltimore here without those two defensive linemen playing.
Yeah, you mentioned it. Huge loss in the middle there. If you look at the carries with and without him, 51 carries, about 150 yards of them on the field, 50 carries, almost 250 yards of them out on the field. So you can see how much more dynamic that run game has been. And you mentioned that Pittsburgh game. Look, I had Baltimore in that game. I watched that game again. It was painful over the week. That, to me, was one of the faultiest finals we've seen in the NFL so far. It was the Baltimore receivers dropping footballs. There were five official recorded drops. I counted about eight of them. One of those, a receiver falling down when he was wide open deep. You had two touchdowns that, Michael, I think both of us would have caught in the end zone that really cost them points as well and would have put that game away early. I love the travel spot here and what the Ravens are doing. This is their second London game. They got absolutely destroyed the first time they went over, lost by 37 points. They flew on a Friday. This is the second time, and they made the decision to fly on Monday, which means that they're going to have a Tuesday's a rest day, then practice Wednesday, Thursday, Friday in London. On the other side here, Tennessee flying in on a Friday. That rest difference, I think, makes a massive advantage here in this spot. We've seen these London games produce margin because if one team gets up, it's hard for the other team to really get live and get back in that type of spot. I think Baltimore has a lot of success here. And this is the first time we're going to have a healthy at Baltimore offensive line since week one as well. So I love laying the four here with the Ravens.
Yeah, cleanest injury report we've seen for a while for Baltimore. And I know last week with Jacksonville having been in London for extended time, it was a little bit of a different situation. But we saw how that impacted Buffalo showing up later on in the week. So definitely something to keep an eye on from the Tennessee standpoint. How about the San Francisco 49ers? We've seen that line tick up from as low as 4.5 to now as high as 7.5. While there's no official news on whether or not Deshaun Watson is going to play, a lot of talk about PJ Walker being that next man up if he is unable to go. What's your approach to this game?
It sure feels like it's PJ Walker time, just based on what we've seen from the injury report. The Cleveland Browns coming off a bye, you would have expected Deshaun was going to be able to practice on Wednesday if he was going to be able to give it a go. Didn't see him at practice yesterday. I don't think we see him give it a go. And this is a situation where this is now ticked up to -7.5 across the board. This is going to go to 9.5 real fast because these books are going to want to have teaser coverage in this spot. It's going to be a heavily teased game. That's what I'm going to do with this as well. I'm going to take that 7.5, play a 6-point teaser. I'm going to knock it down to a 0.5 where I can get the best of the number right now before this makes another move. And I'll pair it up with the Rams, who I think are going to have success at home taking on the Arizona Cardinals. It's not in the long teaser zone, but I didn't really like any of the other dogs that you could tease up to +8. So I took the Rams down to -1. I teased this Niners team down to -1.5. Just so I could get some teaser liability here before all the books are going to push this thing up fast, because there's going to be a lot of teaser, a lot of moneyline parlays coming in on San Francisco once that PJ Walker announcement is official. I think this line is going to go from 7.5 all the way to 9.5. So if you like the Browns, you can wait. You're going to get a better number. I don't think Deshaun's going this week.
Good thought process there.
How about since? Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think he's going this week at all. I think this number's moving against that. I think the book knows it. How about Seattle and the Bengals? You think both teams will be able to move the football effectively? The wind isn't going to be as much of a factor in Ohio as we first thought.
No, I don't think there's going to be as much of a wind issue there. I was happy with what I saw from Burrow. I think he's going to be able to move it against the Seattle defense. And the Seahawks coming off a bye against the defense that I think is down from last year should be able to put points up as well. So give me that over 44.5 in this spot.
You're the man. The music's cueing us out. That is Mike Somich. Check him out at SambaBomb18 on X.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay any day. Download the app and use the promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N, when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, The crown is yours. We'll continue our Thursday night football conversation. Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. The Chiefs offense has not operated at the level that we have become accustomed to seeing, but with the Broncos' historically bad defensive struggles, are they in a position where they can take advantage of Patrick and his Mahomes? Okay, I'm doing too many liberties now with these leads, but that brings us to our next guest. Excited to welcome in Broncos insider at Denver 7 in Colorado, Troy Rank, who joins the program now. Troy, thank you for taking some time ahead of an interesting game against the Kansas City Chiefs tonight. We know the domination 15 straight KC has had over Denver to this point. What are your expectations for tonight?
Yeah, I mean, if you ask Broncos country, it's just not to get blown out. I mean, that's where they are at this season, is anytime they play a good team and they fight out of their class, it's just a fight to stay in the game and stay competitive. This rivalry has been lopsided for 7+ years. Their last win here was September of 2015, when Peyton Manning refused to go gently into that deep night. That team ended up winning the Super Bowl. This team could not be much further from a Super Bowl right now, given where they are from a roster standpoint and talent. But my expectations are it's closer. It's usually closer than you think early because it's a division game and the familiarity does play into that. It's just because of Denver's historically bad defense, it's hard to see them staying with the Chiefs into the fourth quarter outside of some turnovers or sudden change possessions on special teams to keep this game close.
Yeah, I think you're right, Troy. I think, you know, and when you look back at the games, right, when you go back and you look at Andy Reid, I always like to look at when Andy Reid plays against a coach that, you know, he comes in and, you know, last year when he played Vance Joseph out there in the opening game of the season, he put 44 on him. Now, you say, well, the Chiefs aren't as good this year offensively as they were last year, but I think he kind of knows the scheme, and the game really wasn't as close. The Chiefs gave up 14 points in the fourth quarter at the end of the game to make it look closer. But my question to you is say the Broncos lose the game. I know Sean came out and said, we're taking phone calls, but at what point do they just say it's a rebuild? I mean, it's a new coach, new program. You hit the nail on the head. They're not talented. Like, they are just not talented anywhere across the board. Like, when do they do the reset?
I don't know if they announce it as much as it's just going to be demonstrated through their actions. Michael, you're going to see Frank Clark get traded possibly as soon as tomorrow, traded and or released. That was never a good fit from jump. He's better with his hand in the ground. He was signed because of Baron Browning's knee surgery. I thought he was going to get cut in training camp, honestly, just given the lack of reps, and he wasn't running with the first team. And good guy, he's candid. It just hasn't seemed like a fit from jump for him. So I expect he will be the second one out following Randy Gregory. Maybe they can get a seventh rounder for him because of his restructure of his contract to where he's basically at the prorated minimum. And then Jerry Jeudy would be the next one. Cortland Sutton, you'd keep an eye on Justin Simmons. That would be one where, you know, they might be able to get more of a draft pick. They'd like to get a second or third for Jeudy. They held firm for a first on Jeudy all off season. And now, you know, if you're going to move him now, you obviously hindsight, you'd prefer to have moved him in the off season, but injuries prevented some of that. But yeah, I don't know that they would announce a reset. CEO Greg Penner talked about when they signed Sean Payton as creating a culture of accountability, and that this team was going to be a team that Broncos country was proud of. They're not right now, but honestly, the best thing for them would be a reset just to get as many draft picks as possible. They're going to have to get into the quarterback derby. And Wilson's not the reason they're losing. He's not the problem. He's just not the solution going forward. They might have to poison pill it and move on from him after this year, or you keep him on for one more year and you try to draft, whether it's Caleb Williams or Drake May. But they need more Sean Payton guys. He coaches a certain way. You work with Belichick. He wants these smart, tough, disciplined players. And I said this when they hired him. I just don't think they have enough of those players. And some of those players that were good but weren't his style, they're not as good anymore. So it's just been a perfect storm. But I think the rebuild will start and reset will start possibly as soon as tomorrow with Clark. And then right up to the trade deadline, we could see as many as two or three more Broncos move.
Well, and it's so interesting. I wonder what, like, your thought is on what's going on in Sean Payton's mind right now, because when he took over this job, he probably thought, okay, we got a good defense. We got a talented quarterback. It was just a bad coaching job last year. I can step in and do X, Y, and Z and change the trajectory of what we've seen from the Denver Broncos to this point. And then now you're doing essentially just a full rebuild for your team going into year two. Like, that's gotta be a really tough situation for a head coach who is historically just known for success and known for having teams that are able to compete at every level.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair question. Does he have the stomach for this? You know, because if you do it this way, which frankly, you know, they should have done it after the 2017 season. They've been trying to do this Band-Aid approach for several years, and it's a reason they haven't beaten the Chiefs during that time. It's a reason they've had six straight losing seasons and 7 years without a playoff berth, the second longest active drought to the Jets. Because they keep trying to band-aid, and you just look up, and now you're at your fifth coach in 8 years, so you have this island of misfit toys, these players who in a vacuum, or some are talented, but they don't fit the scheme anymore. And so they need to figure out, you know, hey, does Sean Payton have the stomach for this? Is he going to be here for 3-4 years? Because they need to figure out, what is a Denver Bronco? What does that look like? And you draft to that, and you scout to that, and everything kind of fits, because right now, you have a new coach every other year and it doesn't fit. That's part of the issue. And you miss on some guys. Certainly they've missed on guys in free agency, but does he have the stomach for it? And I don't know. Because when he signed up for this, I guarantee you, he thought he could get him to the playoffs. And he said that to me in training camp. He said he would be pissed if they weren't a playoff team. Well, I think it's been jarring how bad they are defensively, historically bad. They've allowed 755 yards rushing over the last three games. I mean, the only way for someone not to run on them is just keep them off the ballot. Just, you know, have an amendment and keep them off the ballot, because everybody runs on them. They've almost given up 1,000 yards in five games. It's so bad from technique, missed assignment, lacking talent. And so some of that's, you know, Payton misjudged. Some of it's Vance Joseph. Some of it's players who've just wildly underachieved. But here they are. That's the sobering reality. But to your point, does Sean Payton have enough of the stomach to say, okay, I'm going to reset this whole thing. We're going to go 3-14, whatever it is. We're going to get as many draft picks as possible. And either we move up to get a quarterback, or we're going to have a number of guys, and all those draft picks, 12 of them, are all going to make the roster, and we're going to pick 3 or 4 strategic free agents. Is that a way? Because that way, I don't mind that way. I think they need to do it, but that's going to take at least into the 2025 season. I can't see them turning around in 1 year.
Yeah. Okay. So where does George Payton fit in all this? I mean, he's the architect of this mostly, right? Where does he fit in this?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's his role from the outs, you know, from being in this and covering it every day. He just feels like the scouting director, not the GM. Sean has full authority on the roster. So I don't know that Payton would survive. Frankly, we were all surprised George Payton survived when Nathaniel Hackett was fired. He sat up there on that stage when Greg Penner announced that Hackett was being fired 15 games into his first season, and Payton just fell on the sword. George Payton just saying, it's my fault. I put this together. They needed him as a new ownership group to kind of guide him through the process for the interviews and get the next head coach. But, you know, and Sean didn't have a pre-existing relationship with George. They respect each other because they both work like crazy. I mean, they put in the time. There's no question about that. So they have that common denominator. It's just, if I had to guess, Michael, that you're going to see someone from the Saints take over as the GM in the offseason. Sean is more comfortable with people he's worked with forever. And given the basic tasks they have ahead of them, my guess is he's going to continue to surround himself with people he's worked with in the past.
Troy, this was an awesome conversation. Thank you so much for doing this. We appreciate it on a game day.
Thank you, Troy. Appreciate you. Good job, man.
Yeah, no problem. Hopefully they'll get better in the next 10 years. I'm not sure I'll still be there to see it, but let's hope.
At least you have the Denver Nuggets right now. At least you have that.
Yeah. And the Avs.
You're like me and the 76ers. You're like me and the 76ers.
make sure you...
I thought what he said there, it was outstanding, but everybody in the league kind of gets a sense that Jeff Ireland, if he can get out of a contract in New Orleans, will go there. We were all surprised he didn't go there after the draft. So I think Troy's got his pulse on the situation. And I think as handicappers, this is going to get worse. You know, it's not going to get better. I think there's a couple teams that you watch today, and we'll talk about this after the break, But there are some teams that we anticipate turning around. I'm not sure they can.
Yeah, a 1-4 start for the Denver Broncos. They have yet to cover so far this year. And should they lose tonight, which the odds certainly indicate will be the case against Kansas City, it'll be the worst start for a Denver team since 1994. We're going to step aside, but we will return on the Lombardi Line in a moment. Don't go anywhere.